splash, blub, 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 blub. That's the sound of the ocean, and you're going deep down in it like Nemo, the Mariner, and the fish. Hey, welcome to the Adventure Zone Zone, America's favorite talk show about the show done by the people who do the show.
And a captain?
What's that?
Captain Nemo? I mean, is he...
I thought that was the Mariner, I assume.
The Mariner. So I did definitely reference
the Mariner and also the fish. And also,
well,
when you said the Mariner, I thought you meant Nemo the Submariner.
Okay.
That was Namor.
Namor. Okay.
What about the boy? There was the sleepy boy.
Not Nemo, the sleepy boy.
Oh, in Slumberland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, a different one. I was thinking of a different sleepy Nemo boy.
What about Captain EO, the defunct 3D film starring Michael Jackson at Epcot?
More like defunky.
What about that?
Yeah, you want to be starting something?
This is a show where we talk about your questions about this season of The Adventure Zone, which is Ethersea, which we've been doing for, when did we start? I don't think it's actually been as long as we think it is, just because we've been going weekly now for a while, and so we've really been, I don't know, it feels like we've been really moving at a clip through this season. I was surprised to see that we are at just about as many episodes as... like Amnesty had.
Yeah, Amnesty and Graduation, I think we're tied. I want to say 6 months, I think.
Yeah, that feels about right. So we have a ton of questions here that people sent in, and we're going to answer them, and we're going to talk to you about the Max Fun Drive, and we're actually going to do that last thing right now.
Here it is. Let me give you the quick rundown, and then we'll get to the questions. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Here's how it works. Once a year, we ask you to consider supporting our show and any other shows on the network that you might enjoy by going to MaximumFun.org/join. There, you will choose a support level that works for you. It starts as low as $5 a month and goes up to other levels, whichever one you want to do. And at each level, you will receive a new reward for becoming a supporter. But I tell you, here's the secret thing, folks. The best one's right there at $5 a month, because for just $5 a month, you get access to hundreds and hundreds of hours of bonus content from each show on the network, including stuff from past Max Fun Drives that you won't hear anywhere else. There's video stuff. There's audio stuff. It's great. And so that starts at just $5. There's a bunch of other ones that we'll tell you about. But right now, if you love our shows and you want to support them, go to MaximumFun.org/join. Do it while you're thinking about it. Don't wait. It only lasts for 2 weeks. Do the thing.
Do the thing.
Come
please
on.
Help us.
Please.
Please. Okay, let's kick things off. We got a question list here that was compiled by our own Sarah Davis. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
And
one of the many people who helps us out that we wouldn't be able to do without your Max Fun support.
There you go.
Yes, of course. I'm going to actually answer a couple of questions in here because we've talked about her contributions a lot this season, but I think there's still a lot of folks who don't realize Rachel Jacobs is responsible for all of the Foley work that has been going on this season and the post-production and editing. Literally all we're doing these days is recording us rolling virtual dice and making butt jokes.
We're able to focus on the art is what Griffin makes.
Right, exactly.
The art of butt jokes.
Thank you. Right, the art of fart.
An enormous thanks to Rachel. She only just started with us in December, I want to say.
Yeah, I mean, what she started like just as we were wrapping up graduation, which is one of the main reasons, and we'll talk about this more. There's a question about it, but one of the main reasons we were able to go weekly is because Rachel Jacobs is here.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's start with this one from Ellen Weatherford, co-host of fellow Max Fun show, Just the Zoo of Us. What did the research and creative process look like for incorporating marine biology into a fantasy setting? I want to give a big shout out to Dad because I started talking about doing this undersea season last, I want to say like spring or so. And Dad like went hardcore on it as he always does. I feel like whenever we start sort of workshopping things and started reading a bunch of books. And
I remember when I told him I was doing graduation and he enrolled in community college and he made friends with five other kind of like very different people from different backgrounds, but they formed a study group and they became like best friends. But then eventually they did cut Dad out of it.
Oh God, I wasn't the Chevy Chase, was I?
Oh.
Of course you were. I read a couple like sort of very dry and boring books about marine biology that didn't grab me, and then Dad bought me a book called The Eternal Darkness, which is a fucking radical name for a book and one of my favorite GameCube era horror titles. But mm-hmm. this is it's the Eternal Darkness: A Personal History of Deep Sea Exploration by Robert Ballard, who is a deep sea marine biologist.
One of my faves. Top 20 for me, easy.
Oh, really?
It's a fantastic read. It's a cool book about the invention of deep sea exploration, which is still like, you know, generally speaking, in its nascent form. Like, there's still so much ocean to explore, and the like extreme risk that goes into, you know, putting yourself under the immeasurable pressure of the ocean to take a picture of a fucked up fish. That, more than anything else, I think inspired a lot of the sort of...
Yeah, you gotta be a real fish pervert to go down and go to all those lengths. That's what I've always said.
Yeah, because you get squished pretty bad.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that, like, I don't know, a lot of the drier books I read inspired things like the Cambria arc, which is, you know, a very fantastical interpretation of like the Cambrian explosion, which was a big moment for Earth. And yeah, I've had a lot of fun learning about the ocean and stuff in doing this season. Not that a lot of that has made it in sort of, you know, one for one scientifically, but yep. It's been very inspiring when it comes time to like figure out an encounter you're going to do, or a mission that you can go on, or just like an event that is taking place in this world that we sort of whipped up.
And Arthur C. Clarke wrote a lot of marine books, a lot of exploration of the sea. The best, I think, was The Coast of Coral, where he and a guy named Mike Wilson went down to Australia. And this was in the 50s. I mean, where they were, you know... practicing with the aqua lungs and trying out all this new underwater technology. And so, yeah, that was a big inspiration too, because Arthur C. Clarke's such an amazing writer, and it was nonfiction. He also wrote a bunch of fiction stuff about marine biology.
But we're not here to talk about him. We're here to talk about us.
I turn to the work when I'm thinking about marine works. I turn to the work of Dr. John Cena. I think that his work in the Marine actually taught me the most.
Absolutely.
Sure.
There's a question here from Megan. Did you have any particular inspiration for the characters in Ethersea outside of what was shared in the world building episodes? And with that, I can also answer Tiger's question, Travis, why French specifically? The answer is Jacques Cousteau.
That's it? It was just that?
Not entirely that, but it was a combination of that. And I wanted him to feel like audibly isolated.
Fancy.
And well, no, different, right? I wanted him to sound different from the Earth, separated from everyone else, because that is how he feels, and he was separated and cloistered, and so that was like part of it. But it also is just for a long time, this is not a joke, whenever I, like, when we were like on the Joko cruise or wherever, looking at the ocean, I'd be like, ah, the sea, how deep and beautiful she is. And it's just what I think of when I think of like deep sea exploration. And that's when it first occurred to me. And so then, you know, I don't know if everyone knows this, but for the last 2 years, had a lot of extra time on our hands. And so I started like doing, you know, French lesson apps on my, my various smart devices, and that is how it developed.
And Dad, you've talked a lot about literally that Arthur C. Clarke book inspired a lot about Zooks, right?
Yeah, because, the coral reef, and this was, like I said, you know, keeping in mind that this was written like 70 years ago, they were just starting to worry about the coral reefs.
Luckily we fixed it. So
yeah, everything's okay now. Not.
Oh, Dad, great use of the not.
That
joke.
Was a really good not.
It was so good, my dude.
Well, I pride myself on, you know, my comedy shtick. But another big inspiration for the character for Zooks was Mr. Data.
Inspiration.
Thank you for putting some respect on his name.
Mister.
Putting Mister on there.
He's a person.
Isn't he like a captain at this point?
No, he's... spoilers. He's dead.
Oh, wow. That's pretty big spoiler, Jeff.
Yeah. And Juice, Ambergris. Was it just the name was funny? Because it's like...
The name was derived from... It's funny that Richard Stink and Ambergris have the same genesis.
Parents?
Like, oh. I became interested in, like, fragrances for a little bit during the pandemic. And I just thought it was an interesting world, mainly through YouTube. I think fragrance YouTube is fascinating because it's people trying to communicate something that is impossible to communicate via the medium they have chosen, which I think is amazing. And I think it's a fascinating world. And when I started reading about Ambroxan, is a very popular synthetic sort of smell that is in a lot of fragrances. And the organic version of that is derived from something called ambergris. And depending on what you decide ambergris is, kind of depends on how you want to sort of interpret it. They don't have the same holes as us.
Yeah.
So you could think of it as a lot of different things. Like it's not vomit. It's more like poop, but only a small percentage of sperm whales make it.
It's sperm whale leavings.
It's sperm whale drippings.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. The good stuff.
But it smells a good.
I bet it does.
It's a nice and musky smell, but I just thought it was funny. I thought it was a funny pun because there's the oceans, and I knew we were doing an ocean one, so that's the name. The character is just like, I wanted to do a type of woman that you see in Appalachia a lot. Most of my characters, like, with the exception of probably Taco. Most of the other ones are informed by West Virginia and Appalachia in some way. And so I wanted ambergris, just like the kind of woman you see at West Virginia, who's just like thin and wiry and indomitable. Like you could, like, this is the sort of woman that you see walking past CVS and you know that a truck could hit her and it would just split around her and she continued to go pick up, you know, whatever
her
she
scratchers.
Had to do that day. Her scratchers or whatever. Yeah. And like, I grew up around this kind of woman a lot in Appalachia, and that was just kind of the vibe that I wanted to capture. Like, I think the working class is always like the most interesting part of a fantasy world. So yeah. That's ambergris.
Oh, there was a third reason for the French too. So as I was then thinking about Devo, and I started like looking with those two things in mind, I started looking for like references for like that's what I think. You know, he would be like the boyfriend from West Wing, the like the guy who dates Zoe after Charlie, who's a real piece of shit. Like a lot of like my like
what a very specific
I know, role. Right? Isn't
I've watched West Wing twice in its entirety. I don't know who the fuck you're talking about.
But he's like this French dilettante. Like, I don't know, Duke or something. And he's just a real piece of shit. And I was like, oh, yeah, like that. He's going to kind of be like that.
Great. Perfect. Yes. Good.
Maxwell asks, how much did you anticipate the random encounters table would influence the adventure? The crit fail obviously changed the course of the arc, but are many of the elements on that table, like the gold ship with ancient runes, designed to add to the story in such a fundamental way? Also, can you release what's on the table after the story ends? Cross fingers that Clint rolls a crit 00 as redemption. I mean, it's changed the story a whole lot. Like, obviously, the one, like, what I had, I forget exactly what I had in there for the one. Actually, let me pull it up. Basically, the one was, like, the Sallow returns to Founder's Wake. Like, the Sallow becomes a big, bad thing. And I envisioned that as being, like, a pretty big story arc. But I did not envision it as being, like, the third story arc.
Are they all pretty specific, or are they like they encounter
no, they
a weird
are all,
creature?
Most of them are like very broad. The gold ship one was interesting because that was, you know, you find wreckage from a ship that is, you know, laden with gold. And when you rolled that, like, I also have this like sort of vision board for Hominine in mind as being sort of like, you know, gilded and arcane and all this stuff. the Wisp and all that shit, like, that was just jazz, baby. And
is
going on to be, like, sort of a huge thing for, like, the big plot kind of moving forward. Like, the idea of finding this, like, you know, map to a lost city is, like, not something that I anticipated being, I don't know, a thing when I included it in this chart. I just thought, like, oh, and they'll get some, like, weird magic stuff and some gold out of this salvage. But then it just kind of ended up being a much, much bigger thing.
Do you feel, I've been wondering this, Ditto, do you feel, like, that you put yourself to maybe an unreasonable challenge with the combination of us picking the jobs and the random encounter table? Like, that, how much you have to, like, just be on, like, on the ready, like, basically the entire time we're recording? Or is
no, because it is a challenge, right? But it's also, like, what I think we're all trying to do this season, or at least I hope we're all trying to do, which is, I saw this really great, I've been watching, like, a lot of, like, storytelling seminars, because it's, you know, it staves off the lonely times to just have people's voices in your ears. I'm sure the listeners at home know all about this. But funnily enough, of all the ones that I have found to be, like, the most helpful is one from Trey Parker and Matt Stone talking about the structure of, like, any given South Park episode and the way that, and I'm not, you know, I love that fucking twisted South Park.
So twisted. Yeah, dude, obviously. Man, so
I am not, like, I'm not a huge, like, fan of their work. I'm not, like, a big South Park guy.
Why
at all,
are you dragging it? What is your problem with the South Park twisted skewed view?
Too twisted for you?
It's a little too twisted for me, yeah. Okay. The way that they talk about storytelling is that between each beat in the story, if you have to use the words and then, it's bad. Like, that's not going to be a good story. Like, and then this happens, and then something else happens, and then this happens. But if you use therefore and but between each beat, it and therefore the story kind of evolves out of itself.
And they do use a lot of buts.
That is what makes a good story, especially a good, like, sort of self-contained story, which I think we try to do with each of our sort of campaign arcs. And so I've really just kind of been trying to let that take the lead. Like, I have a whiteboard with some, like, kind of ideas on it for, like, shit.
Mm-hmm.
So the other team that works for the Blue Span Brokerage, like, your guys' sort of rivals, are doing some stuff that, like, I kind of started to spin out of the missions you all didn't take, right? And so, like, there's some stuff that's true about the world there. I know something about Hominine, like, where it is, whether or not, like, that ever comes to fruition or not. Like, I don't know what the big story of this season is going to be, and that's kind of exciting to me. It's really just going to sort of land on what you all kind of want to do with the information that you are, you know, receiving in real time. I think what you all are in right now, what we recorded sort of the first episode of, and then are going to continue recording moving on, this sort of, like, sort of murder mystery thing, is going to inform the next part of the season, and it could be the big story or whatever. But I'm also fine with it not, you know, having some big grand arc. I'm also okay with, like, us reaching a point where we've done some cool stuff in the world and we walk away from it for a little while. Like, I feel like more than anything we've done in the past, Ethersea is something that we could come back to with, like, a different team of characters in, like, a season two and, like, do different stuff. Like, I feel that is the thing I'm happiest about with this season is I feel like it is a very cool world.
Yeah.
With very cool rules.
I mean, that's a benefit, right, of Avery Alder's Quiet Year, right? Of,
right,
like,
yeah,
we built the world first.
Right. And, like, you know, I wanted it to be this story of just these rough and tumble freelancers just taking on jobs, but, like, I feel like you all are entrenched in the world in a meaningful way. Like, mm-hmm. you all are making big moves and you are involved in sort of big things. And, you know, I don't know how to get around that. There is a way to tell a story that is less sort of, you know, grand heroism, etc. But that's, I guess I just don't really know how to tell that kind of story. But yeah, that's when it comes to, we have a lot of questions here about like, what do you envision as being like the big story of the season, and how much longer does the season have to go? Like, I swear to God, I don't know. And that's pretty cool. And you know, a little bit scary, but honestly, doing it this way is kind of easier in some ways. It's and messier. I harbor no illusions about that, but I'm enjoying it doing it this way, which is to say, I think especially as far as D&D is concerned, like the correct way, a lot more than I have in the past.
All right, we've only gotten three questions done, so let's pick up the pace a little bit. Okay. This is from Richie for Justin. It's a box of chocolates. Whenever there's a flashback, do you have most of Ambergris' backstory already decided, or is it making it up along the way kind of thing?
Are you sure you want the answer? No. I love flashbacks are great because especially like in the exact moment, because I don't know what Griffin's going to come at me with. Like, I don't know where it's going to open up. So when you hear a flashback, especially because it's picking up a random place and the calculus of it has to end at the, like, we know where the, like, we know the terminus of it. You know what I mean? It's usually not hugely impactful on where the narrative is at that point, but you know, like, Ambergris not gonna like lose a foot or something, you know what I mean? Like, we know
yeah,
at least that much. So when you hear a flashback, it's just like pure invention, and that's like really my characters start in the way that Ethersea has, with like a pretty rough sketch, and most of it is like discovery and just like what I think is interesting. Like, early on, I was using a lot of like slang with Ambergris, and I realized like it just didn't move things along that well. Like, it didn't communicate enough, and it just sort of like seemed self-serving because she wasn't encountering people who would use some of the same terminology. So I kind of like eased away from that. But it's just like, that's discovery. That's like chipping away at the character to find out who she is. And like the backstories are great. Or flashbacks, rather, are great times to do that. So I just kind of like, it's basically like free association. Like, I imagine it and just sort of let it. If you believe in like the way like people like Elizabeth Gilbert or David Lynch view creativity, where you're sort of like going down into the depths and seeing what you come up with, like, especially for me, flashbacks are just like fishing. I'm like trying to open it up and just see what sort of pops into my head.
I love that that is exactly the polar opposite of me, where like the way I like, basically every time now I've created a character for one of Griffin's campaigns, I have said like, okay, this is it, and this is what happened, and this is why, and this is who, and then Griffin's like, okay, great, forget all of that, and then if a moment comes up to apply it, so be it. And so it's just like, I've told him, like, if it ends up being this, that would be great. And then, like, occasionally it perfectly fits what we're going for. So, like, that little door gets opened a little bit more.
But full transparency, most of the time it doesn't. And I feel like that is a point of contention that comes up a lot. And it is, like, this season especially, I have become completely disinterested in backstories. Genuinely do not care about them. Beside the impact that they have on the story that is happening in the episodes that we are all hearing right now.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it is a huge fault of that we have fallen prey to in every past season, all of them, right? Is this like reliance on oh man, if y'all could have been there, you would know why this person is like this.
That's why I'm trying to stay away from it. Like, even though my every fiber of my being wants to, because it is kind of inherently manipulative, right? Because it's just like, I don't have to roll for this. I don't have to like role play it. I don't have to like make a decision with anyone else. It's just me telling you how cool or sad or important my character is.
And it's honestly like, if we did do another season in Ethersea, or like another whatever you want to call it, with like different characters, I would go even harder on insisting that there are no backstories whatsoever. Like, not whatsoever, but beyond, like, you know, I have a character who has this kind of personality, and this is where they got their, you know, the skills that they have. Like that's about it. Because it's, I don't know, it's becoming, it is inherently not collaborative to say like, well, you see, so-and-so has, what? Do you disagree? Well,
just a little, because I think knowing a backstory for your character informs that character, creates that character, and allows you to live in that character. Whether or not that information ever comes to the fore, I think that the backstory, it's like doing a character analysis in a play or something. I mean, you to know how your character is going to decide or know how your character is going to react to something.
Sure.
I think you have to have some backstory.
Okay, we're really getting in the weeds, but I do want to say, I think, though, while I fundamentally agree with you, I don't go in for much like scene study type stuff, but I do, from an acting perspective, I understand that. What I think is interesting about this specific form of storytelling is that, to me, normally when you're doing character study like that, you're starting with a text, and then you're bringing, as an actor, you're bringing the stuff to it, right? I feel like what we're doing is functioning in the immediate, and then that's the text. Like, we're making the text as we go, right? So it is, we're writing the text, and then we're also doing the work of figuring out the backstory, but we're doing it afterwards. Like, coming up with a backstory without a text is kind of impossible because you don't know what the text is yet, right?
I bet that there are TV actors who like do episodic television listening to this, like, you dumb shit, you do it like this.
Okay. But that's also like what we're talking about is just like different approaches. That's which absolutely I think is really true. Interesting. Like, it's, I think it's, I just can't do that. Like, I can't.
Speaking of different approaches, did you know there's many different ways that you can become a Max Fun supporter? Yes.
Bullshit. Oh. Yeah, no. You fucking shill. Oh, let's come on.
Let's get Dad on the ones and twos because this is.
Oh, he's the master of this. Let him go. Let him go. Wind him up.
Well, that's very nice of you, Justin. Well, I think Travis has already covered the $5 tier.
Sure. Yeah.
The 350 hours of bonus content. At the $10 tier, you get all that stuff plus a Letterpress Max Fun membership card.
Ooh.
One of 35 embroidered patches. They're designed cool. by
They should have made more. We're fucked.
Moret Bonadieu Bondaroo
Merit
from
Bondaroo.
Frog and Toad Press.
Yeah.
$20. All that we just mentioned, plus your choice of either the Max Fun Creativity Pack. That includes an inspiration deck with 54 cards illustrated by Ellen Vandermeide, featuring activity suggestions from Max Fun hosts and staff, 3 postcards, a piece of non-hardening, colorful modeling clay, and a custom black wing pencil or an embroidered rocket hat. And the $35 tier, well, everything above, plus a Max Fun messenger bag. It's a cotton canvas bag with the Max Fun rocket logo embroidered on the front.
And as we mentioned earlier, between Sarah Davis, Rachel Jacobs, and many other people behind the scenes that you don't always hear on the microphones, we could not make these shows without them at that point, and we wouldn't have them without your support. Not to mention, way, way back when, we were able to make making these shows our full-time job so that they became the priority, so that we would miss less episodes, so we would be able to tour more. So, like, with Taz, we would be able to go weekly. All of these things.
Yeah. More than any other year.
Yeah.
I feel like the proof is in the pudding in that we are able to go weekly because we hired someone who is incredibly talented to handle post-production. Like, that's a direct connection. Exactly how it works. And that happened because you all came out to support us last year in a year where, you know, we weren't touring and we, you know, needed help.
But let's not sugarcoat it. Last year we didn't hit our goal and you all failed us for the first time ever. You let us down. And are you going to make that? Like, I'm willing to forgive and forget.
Yeah.
I can be the bigger Justin. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, not, you know, fool me once, etc. You know, I really need you all to prove to me that that was a fluke.
And you can do that. You can do that by either becoming a new member, by upgrading your membership, you can boost your membership, or You can buy a gift membership for a friend or an anonymous Max Funster who wants to join but isn't able to, right? And you can do all three of those at MaximumFun.org/join. You can see all the stuff there. MaximumFun.org/join. Think about joining now. If you want to, do it now while you're thinking about it. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. There's not a lot of time left. Go now, MaximumFun.org/join.
Let's see.
I got one.
Yeah, please.
Could I do one? And this is very important to me. It's from John, and I'm bringing this up because I took a lot of shit from my co-stars about this. And I'm telling you, my underlings, I took a lot of shit from you underlings.
Thank you, Dad.
About this. I really enjoy Taz. I want to send a question regarding table environment, house rules. Are there major moments do players try to ask about the outcomes? I'll frame this through episode 34-35 of Ethersea. Clint has Zooks activate the self-destruct on the dreams of Deborah during episode 34, but at the onset of 35, we hear Clint express a desire to undo this, for lack of a better term. We know that in Taz history, events that the players do not feel are right can be modified to fit the overall story, but that did not seem to be necessary here.
This is so weird. I'm watching Dad type this into the document as we're doing it. This is so weird.
No, Dad is not. Listen, this is honest to God the truth. I was trying to be a good player by using the ship worksheet for combat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About the ships. And so there is a self-destruct.
Uh-huh.
So my intention was to try to overbluff the bluff.
And you did. Because I would say spectacular.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, he bluffed the fuck out of it.
Because it says...
He bluffed it up. To hell. Yeah, bluffed it up, man.
Bluffed it to Davy Jones's locker.
At the start of the user's next turn, the ship explodes, but can be canceled as an action with a DC 15 repair check. And with my hand up, my intention was to start the countdown of the self-destruct, hoping they would back off.
Yeah.
And then to cancel it. And that is the truth. The way it worked out, I was very happy about it.
Yeah.
But that really and truly was my plan.
I understand that.
I didn't think it would wreak the havoc that it did.
You did
which, please,
leave.
Travis.
You did leave the ship.
Yes, I said jumped into the moon pool.
And then you were going to like stretch Armstrong
away.
It
feels like we're doing this again.
Okay, here's the real thing, though. You asked about the table environment. And the short answer is like... there's the story. I like to think of the show that we make more of like the writer's room, right? Of like, it's more than just like recording a show to me, right? We're telling the story, but then we're also
real to me, damn
it's real. But the four people are also like me, Justin, Griffin, Dad are also like our own characters in making the show. It's one of the ways like the graphic novel, for example, is different from the podcast, right? And so there are character choices that the characters make. That's like, yeah, I love that. That's great. And then there are also like us doing it where it's like, wow, okay, that's wild. Let's do it. Sure, right? Where we are commenting and like maybe giving each other a hard time from time to time. But that doesn't mean we don't think it's a good story decision. Yeah. It's just like a big, bold swing that's like must be commented on.
And in terms of like table rules, like, it's very... very freeform, very rule of cool. Like I say that. I think that also this season there have been more moments of me not allowing sort of allowing you all to tap into godlike superpowers, because I think that danger is something that has never really existed in the Adventure Zone. And I really want to be careful that we don't just like keep answering the same questions every TT has. But like it makes things more cool when there's a chance they won't happen.
Yes.
And this season, like we have not fudged roles really. And
bad roles.
We've had such bad roles.
Yeah, obviously. Like there have been really bad roles and some really bad shit has happened to the team. But I don't know. I hope we've been more consistent about that, because I really want there to be lots of cases where things don't go the way that you guys want them to go.
Yep.
Let's see. Griffin, have the boys ever thrown such a curveball into your story that you have had to pause the recording to figure out what to do next? I mean, yes, we've talked about this a lot with past seasons. In terms of Ethersea, I had some sort of like general routing ideas for this last mission, right? The menagerie mission that when Dad blew up the station were completely thrown out the window. Like, but that wasn't so much pause the recording moment. That was a go back to what I had prepared for this mission after the episode, because that was sort of the end of that episode, and then just like trying to figure out where things kind of go from there. But yeah, I mean, that's sort of been more or less it. When Dad rolled the one, it was like, how do I introduce this complication in a way that doesn't completely like derail the mission that they were going on? And so that was kind of the delayed time bomb of, you know, scraping on the bottom of the thing and then bringing the virus or whatever back to the city.
I want to ask a question from KD, because I've also wondered this from its inception. The biggest baby, does it sit on the surface of the sea, or does it sit below the... Is it a submarine, Griffin, or is it like...
The surface of the sea is sort of occupied by a like an extremely thick, dense field of debris that I imagine is like sort of gnashing, like unnavigable.
Okay.
Like people don't go to the surface,
right?
Because it's like you cannot get there without your ship getting like crunched up. So no, the biggest baby I imagine floats offshore, or not offshore, but like in the distance, I think visible from Founder's Wake.
But is it, you say floats, okay, that didn't answer it. Is it in the water? Is it underwater?
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
You said floats.
Just answer that.
Things float underwater. Why are you being semantic about
this? I was honestly confused. And if I'm confused, there's at least one other person out there who's confused. Does it look like a submarine? Because I've always pictured it like a battleship that was underwater.
I mean, it
doesn't look like anything, because this is a podcast.
Okay.
No, it is, I don't know. I think of it as sort of boxy and monolithic and like not aerodynamic, because that's not its thing. It's like a big gun.
Yeah.
That like, if its power is incredible, and you know, I like the idea of this being, there being this like narrative justification for why Founder's Wake isn't just like under attack all the time.
Yeah.
I feel like would be stymieing. It's like a submarine. It's underwater.
Matthew asks, I was wondering how the party feels broadly about role-playing their characters this season and the classes each character is.
We talked about role-playing their characters this season.
I want to know about the classes.
I want to hear what you guys all think about your classes.
I will say this. I think I chose a very specific kind of bard that is like a focus on like control and like psychic stuff. And it's definitely a different caster experience than playing like a wizard, or, you know, somebody with a broad range of like either attack or healing or whatever, right? Like, I basically built him specifically to be good at one kind of magic.
Right.
And it has forced me a little bit to try to think more, and I think it works for the character too, but to think more in like growing in his ability to actually use words to persuade.
Yeah.
But I enjoy playing a bard, man. It's fun to have somebody who's really good at like one thing.
Right.
I think I overdid it with the monk. This is my second time playing a monk. And I just don't, I don't, I think that, okay. I think the monk is a little weird for us. One, it's like weirdly cultural in a way that I don't love. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
sure.
Monk has a lot of like religious and sociological baggage that I don't love. And I think it's a little bit like, I feel like the tactical advantages of the monk would be more obvious in a game that was played a little like less loose than ours.
Sure.
I think that, so I'm not like down, I'm speaking specifically to the Adventure Zone experience of playing a monk versus like the overall experience, because I know that there's like lots of benefits. It's also less flashy, which is than like the Wizard or the Druid. So that's tricky too, because it's like when you're doing a show for entertainment, you don't just want like, okay, it's fun in Dungeons and Dragons when you're playing with friends. It can be fun to do an encounter because at that point you're playing a game.
Yeah.
And you can turn off the sort of like character part of your brain and just like think about tactics and strategy and all that stuff. And with what we do, like it kind of, there's sort of the impetus to still make it fun. Like we can't just say like, well, it's not going to be entertaining to listen to for a little bit because we have to do a fight.
I punch again.
Yes, I punch again. And I feel self-conscious about that a lot with Amber Gray. Like you can tell in my voice when I'm like, I punch again. Like, and it's not saying there's not other things I could do. It's just like,
I used to feel that same way with Magnus, man, where it's just like, I swing the sword a sixth time. Like, yeah, I get it.
You guys, but you all also have access to, and you know, it's funny. We just did a live show like 2 days ago. And that is where y'all's like lateral thinking skills like really shine. I know I give Dad a hard time for it, but I feel like Dad is the best at this, where he's like, I wrap a chain around a chandelier on the ceiling. And then, and sometimes that gets a little bit too fantastical, where it's like, and I wrap it around his head and he dies. But that's, I mean, that is something that I feel like, especially Amber is like fully equipped to do. And also, like, another thing to keep in mind is you all are level 5.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you all are not, I think you guys are used to a certain level of like Swiss Army knife-ness, because of the characters that you have played in past sort of D&D campaigns. But you know, you'll get there.
Dad, what about you?
I love playing a ranger. I mean, I originally kind of envisioned Zooks would be the point man. And, you know, then I realized he was also sort of the tank. This is what I found interesting is the fact that the ranger aspect provided what I think is the defining characteristic about Zooks, and that's the swarm.
Yeah.
Because very early on, we decided all of Zooks's quote unquote spells would be swarm based, and trying to adapt that to the play has been fun. I enjoy that a lot. One of the first things I thought that Zooks would do, a lot of coral is stings. And when I talk about coral,
stinks?
I don't mean necessarily the stinks. Stings.
It smells super, it does sting. Super bad.
It stings, and so that's how a lot of the polyps and things in the coral protect themselves. And I thought, oh, it'd be really cool if he had a burning touch. Well, that didn't function out very well.
No, but how would you high five? Come on, man.
Yeah, that's true. With my non-stinging hand. So I've really liked having swarmed, and it's kind of limited some of the things that Zeus can do, but it's been fun. I really enjoy that aspect of it. I think that really defines him.
I will also say, without talking about specific character role play, but like just as a team, one of the things that I really like is that we all went into it. So like Zeus and Devo are very new to this world. Zeus literally, and Devo through lack of exposure to anything. And Amber has kind of like is coming out of retirement. So we kind of established from the beginning, like, one, they have not worked together, and two, they're all not great at it. And so that was kind of, like, early days, I kind of decided for Diva, like, he's going to fuck up a lot of, like, negotiations and interactions. He's going to push too hard, and he's going to do this shit because he doesn't know how it works.
The journey Devo is on is interesting to me, because as the DM for this season, and therefore like trying to be in the headspace of like the characters that Devo talks to, Devo's kind of detestable.
Oh yeah.
Like he is old school self-righteous heroism in a way that like has died in this world has no use for, right? I see that this world as being like fully pragmatic all the time. And shit is really bad, and there are compromises that have to be made, and everybody is out here doing their best. And Devo is this cloistered 20-something who thinks he knows the best way to do it.
Who gets on the definition of piss and vinegar. Yeah.
And gets on, but it's not piss and vinegar. It is like upstart, like young upstart self-righteousness.
Yeah.
When like the fact of the matter is like, it's not that black and white for most of the characters that he talks to. And so I don't know how much of that is like, it's fascinating because now we get into this meta-narrative thing of like that part of it, I think, is how we used to play D&D, right? Like mm-hmm. that feels very Magnus to me, this like we are on the side of justice and right. But that's not like inherently true all of the time.
Absolutely.
Amber did it too, right? With obviously there's some like backstory beef there with her and Shret. But like that too was like a you're wrong, you piece of shit. In like a place where I don't know 100% that is the truth. And so like I don't know, it's interesting because I think the characters have justifications for feeling that way, but I also think a reason that comes up so much is because it is sort of how our characters have talked and interacted and thought about the world in the past.
Well, it's also I know we can't get off of points, but Devo is wrong. Like that's the thing is I there's a reason I made him young, and like the cloistered thing and the fact that he was born after they had come to Founder's Wake, that like he does not understand what his feelings mean. So, like, his anger and righteousness make him feel right, right? Yeah. Like, he's wrong. Like, he does not know how to think about other people's feelings. He does not know how to, like, process that just because he wants it and it feels right and all that stuff, that is, you know what I mean? So, like, it's something I'm really trying to play is that he is not by, you know, my own now 38-year-old standards, a good person.
Yeah.
That he's kind of a piece of shit.
Thomas asked what inspired the crescendo. That was sort of the faction that, honestly, it was, I had an idea for it to be like a bigger faction, and then you all kind of blew up the ship, and then I realized like, maybe it's more interesting if it just doesn't happen. Of just like, you know, I don't like, but sort of narratively speaking, like, just rich asshole cults.
Yeah. You mean like Muffy and Winthrop?
Yeah, like Muffy and Winthrop. But this one's even more like, not even nihilistic. Well, I guess kind of nihilistic, where it's just like, I want to be the one to make polar bears go extinct. And then you all just like put the like only two characters that you ever really interacted with like completely in the toilet in that fight. And I was kind of okay with them just being like sort of pushover jokes because they're probably not the most powerful of characters living in this world.
Juice, you got one you want to answer?
No, I like you guys asking me questions. Okay. It makes you feel like I'm your teacher, and you've come to the foot of the master to learn.
I want to say, sort of, this is there's a couple questions about like asking us about the deciding to do an underwater campaign and asking about the different sort of source books. I just want to say one just came out called Spelljammer. That's apparently like a space-themed D&D 5e like expansion book set in the astral plane. That sounds pretty sick. Sounds pretty cool. I want to read that one and see if it's cool. It's called Spelljammer, and that alone is like a good name for a book.
Yeah.
It is a good name for a book.
Let's see. Caitlin asks, have you found that your contribution to the construction of this world gives you a deeper understanding of it? And the answer is 1,000% yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, if you look at it, I thought about this around, like, episode 5, where I realized, like, I was the one who introduced, based on, like, a card, the parish. And so my character, I didn't make
that. But you all did that. We've talked about that.
Yeah, right?
You all did that shit.
Right, that's what I'm saying. And then Dad, Coral Body.
Came up with Coral Robots.
And the
Justin came up with Uncle Joshy's Blink Sharks. Yeah. yeah, it's made things, honestly, it's made things, it makes things so much easier for me from like a broader narrative perspective, because I have tried very hard to just focus all of the big story beats on that stuff. Like, I had some things about the world when we started doing Quiet Year, like about Hominine and all that jazz, that I kind of had in mind. But so far, I have tried to just focus on things that you all sort of you all kind of established about the world, and I want to keep doing that. What does the ether seed taste like? KD asks. Probably not.
Great. Nobody's tasted it, right?
Well, what does it taste like to you?
No, there are characters who have tasted the ether seed.
Okay.
Imagine if you accidentally sprayed Axe body spray in your mouth. That's what I imagine.
No, I think it has a good taste.
You think so?
You know,
yeah, I think it has like a good taste.
You know how salt water is like has salt and it's salty in it? And we've talked about this salt, you know, as like a magic reagent in this world. But Prestige. Maybe instead it tastes good and sugary.
I mean, listen, Devo sprays it into his mouth.
Yeah, that's probably true. Maybe it's like Banaka then.
See, yeah. honest to God, like. Banaka is how I've always pictured the atomizer. That it is just not like one of those like spray with a bulb on it. That's just
I don't
like...
think they make Banaka anymore.
Really? Oh my God! Finish the show.
Finish the show.
No, I want to talk. Hey,
Travis can't go on.
Speaking of the show, it's this show, Max Fun Drive. It's going on now, folks.
No way.
Yeah. Max,
why haven't you said anything about this before?
I should have mentioned it sooner, Justin. You're absolutely correct. We got lots of different levels that you could choose to support or upgrade your support to. This is going out the second week, and we're recording it day one of the first week. So I assume at this point we've blown past our goal. We're well on our way to triple digits. I don't know. We'll see. But we can only do that with your help when you join, upgrade, or boost your membership, or buy a gift membership for a friend. What is boosting your membership, Travis? You threw that right in there in a minute. Well, I'll tell you. Maybe you've already reached a level, you're already a supporter, and you think, man, I'd love to give more, but the next level, that's a little too much for me. I can't afford to give that much. We totally understand that. You can boost by giving a little bit more every month. You won't qualify for the next level gifts, but you will contribute to the goal. You will support the art and artists you love, and we will appreciate it. So there you go. You know what, Griffin?
Yeah.
What is Max Fun supporters' support meant to you personally?
It's meant the world. Like, I don't think the Adventure Zone is a difficult show to make, and it always has been. From a like pre-production, post-production standpoint, it is tough. Right? It's not hard to get the as we have more kids in the world, kind of becomes more challenging. I would say it is getting harder to get the four of us together in a single call at the same time. But it's, you know, it is much harder show to make than anything else that we do, right? And so if we didn't have a large audience of people coming out to directly support it, and had been doing so for, you know, a decade now, we wouldn't be making it. And we certainly wouldn't be making it weekly. We certainly wouldn't be making it with, like, a big team of people that we've been able to hire. Like, and all of that means that, like, I've gotten to spend my working days on the most sort of satisfying and life-affirming sort of creative endeavor that I've ever come across. And so, like, it means everything to me.
Well, there you go, folks. For just pennies a day, you could support waifs like Griffin to help us make this show. Your support means the world to us, obviously, as Griffin has said. And I think Justin, Dad, and I'll speak for us to say, ditto to what Griffin said.
What?
The same. No, oh. Sorry, the same. But we can only do this with your support by going to MaximumFun.org/join. I was thinking before we wrapped up, because we've covered most of the questions, is there any like last things you guys wanted to say about Ether C? Well,
I actually had an idea for how to wrap up.
Okay.
I want to know before we reach our conclusion here, what about either the world or the characters, even if it's not something that currently is sort of in the scope of the story we've been telling, even if it's not like a plot beat that we've introduced that, you know, we could return to in the future. Like, I want to know what you all want to explore more in this world, keeping in mind like all the shit that we established in the setup episodes and the stuff that has kind of even just popped up on the periphery. Like, what's interesting to you guys about the world, and what do you want to know more about?
I Justin McElroy here. I would like a storyline that is similar to what that explores leisure. I feel like we have done a couple now that have explored like how the upper classes entertain themselves, right? We had like a sort of zhuzhi cha-cha auction, and then we had the obviously like hunting animals for sport is like definitely like an upper crust. I would like something kind of like Pedals to the Metal, where it's like, what are the lower classes doing for recreation? I think that that's pretty, I think that that's kind of an interesting, like, is there sports? Is there, like, what are we doing in that regard? Because people will have to pass the time somehow.
Sure.
And I'd be interested in that.
I think one of the things that we have not really touched on at all is like how this world of Ether C and stuff has affected like family structure and affected like education, like basically the like day-to-day life of people living there. Like, do we send kids to school for 8 hours a day, or is it like all hands on deck, we need to work? Is it like, you get married and if you don't want to have kids, that's fine? Or is it like, listen, we need to repopulate? Or is it the other way around of like, we only have so many resources, and so we have to be careful about stuff like that? Like, what day-to-day mechanics, I mean, Justin touched on it with like recreation, but what are the like restrictions and limitations that have been imposed because of limited resources and stuff like that?
Okay.
I think I'd like to know more about what happened to the Einar, and I don't know how we can do that, but I mean, the fact that a whole civilization was wiped out, and their ghosts still hung around, I still find that a very compelling question. I like the really big questions like that, and what caused the storm?
What does the Ether Sea taste like? Yeah, basic stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Why is Zug so darn cool? That was one of the questions.
I'd like Devo to meet some sexy singles, if we could figure that out.
Whoa, yes, romance. We've been short on that this season.
Yeah, get Devo to meet some sexy singles in his area. I think that would be really cool. And just have him smooch a bunch of people.
Okay.
More smooching.
I want to smooch my brother.
Along those lines, let me say this. Along those lines, they do still make Banaka.
Thank you.
Okay. Good.
Oh,
thank
God.
You.
What a relief.
Thank you for confirming.
What a huge relief.
Oh, my
relief.
God. And you know what else is a relief? You knowing that you're going to support us at MaximumFun.org.
I think, Travis, actually, you've done enough transitions to the pledge breaks.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we really, really need your support. After last year's abject failure, we got to come back from it. And I think this is the exact moment that you, insert your name here, should go to MaximumFun.org/join. And do the right thing. We make this show for you to delight you. We do it for free, but we don't. And we probably wouldn't now that I say it out loud because it's so hard. We really, really appreciate your support. And it means the world to us. And it allows us to make the stuff we make. If you like this stuff and you want there to be more of it, this is your moment. I've been waiting for you. Get on my back. I'm walking over to the website anyway. That where there's one set of footprints is where I carried you to the URL maximumfun.org/join. For just $5 a month, you're going to get a honestly nauseating amount of bonus content, BOCO in the parlance of the network. The years of really honestly wild stuff. You want to hear us play Adventure Zone with Lin-Manuel Miranda? It's in there.
Matt Mercer.
I mean, there's lots of incredible stuff.
I just, by the way, did the quick math. If you hit play on the 350 hours, that's about 15 days straight of bonus content.
Get a poop sock ready.
Yeah, man.
Get ready.
I wish that's how we ended the episode. I wish we had the guts.
Get a poop sock ready. Audio sticker.
To end the episode on that.
We actually have no way to end these. We've never come up with one.
Thanks, everybody, so much for supporting us and listening to Adventure Zone and Ether Sea. We'll be back with more episodes next week.
Bye.
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 Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.